Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Robert Doyle, Deputy Director of the U.S. Geological Survey. Also joining us in our studios from IBM is Kunal Saravanchi. Bob, I understand that in 2007, the USGS developed a science strategy outlining the major natural science issues facing the nation in the next decade. Could you elaborate on this science strategy and its implications? Specifically, to what extent does the new strategy better address complex environmental challenges through a systems-based approach?
Well, the new strategy outlines areas where natural sciences can make a substantial contribution to the well-being of the nation. It's a 10-year forward look for the Bureau, and it gives us an indication of future direction and growth. Put together a team of scientists and ask them to do a rigorous assessment of our current science goals and priorities and to identify global trends and national priorities. And we also ask them to formulate a plan that would build on the existing strengths of the agencies and to challenge us to better integrate the full breadth and depth of our science and our information capabilities. So the focus of this strategy falls into six thematic areas: climate variability and change, which helps us clarify the record and assessing the consequences; a water census for quantifying, forecasting, and securing fresh water for America's future; energy and minerals provide scientific foundation for resource security, environmental health, economic vitality, and land management. Also have hazards, risk and resiliency assessment program, ensuring for us a long-term health and wealth of the nation. Human health is also identified as a theme, where we're challenged to develop a system and a process that identifies environmental risks to public health in America. And the final theme deals with the understanding of ecosystems and predicting ecosystems change to ensure that the nation's economic and environmental future is secure. These are thematic areas that represent complex, multi-scale challenges, challenges to which the USGS is uniquely positioned to apply the fundamental understanding of natural processes related to geology, hydrology, biology, and geography, and to provide a comprehensive, coherent systems approach for addressing these challenges.
So the first five, I think I understand a bit, but that last one, ecosystems, could you tell us a little bit more, what is an ecosystem and why have you focused on understanding these?
Well, ecosystems are viewed as the life support system for Earth. Ecosystems provide important services for sustaining human life, including fresh air, fresh water, soils, carbon sequestration, and pollinators for crops, to name a few. Ecosystems are generally self-sustaining. However, they can reach a certain threshold beyond which it is unable to repair itself. So USGS, with its multidisciplinary science, is in a unique position to provide a holistic view and a sound understanding of the ecosystems and ecological processes so that wise management can prevent crossing those thresholds. Mapping, monitoring, modeling, and understanding ecosystems is important for informing resource managers in their challenge of balancing land use and land change issues within human needs.
So going back to the first one on climate, we're beginning to see how the climate seems to influence every aspect of our life here on Earth. Could you elaborate on USGS's efforts to deepen and expand the climate science research? Specifically, how is USGS contributing to the global discussion on climate change, and how are you supporting decision makers in this area?
Well, USGS scientists have spent decades conducting research and collecting information on climate change and its effect on ecosystems and its implications for resource managers. The Department of Interior is responsible for managing 1 in every 5 acres of land in this country. They have a significant interest on how climate change influences its stewardship responsibilities. As climate predictions are made, USGS scientists can use their understanding of how ecosystems function to predict how ecosystems will change in a response, allowing resource managers to develop adaption or mitigation strategies for protecting wildlife, such as ducks, that rely on water or food produced by the ecosystem. This year, the USGS is engaged in developing a climate effects network that will serve as an early warning system for resource managers and policymakers so that they can identify problems before they become chronic or costly. Well, the debate and the discussions of climate change that occur has many dimensions to it. Our focus has more been on the effects, and we've been trying to develop adaption and mitigation strategies that can be used by our resource managers so that we can preserve and protect the resources on the land.
Now, Bob, it's my understanding that energy and mineral resources are the backbone of human food supplies, economies, and national security. Would you tell us about the USGS's efforts to broaden its energy and mineral resource research? Specifically, what are the key strategic areas that this agency will focus over the next decade in energy and mineral resource research, and how will that benefit the United States and resource management?
The U.S. is the largest user of mineral commodities and energy resources in the world, and our economy and our standard of living depend on them. Because many of these resources are imported from trading partners around the world, it's important for us to understand the domestic and global supplies, distribution, use, and their future needs. As directed by the Energy Policy and Conservation Act, over the past 4 years, the USGS has been studying the resource potential of oil and gas on public lands. In our research plans, we'll be looking at alternative energy sources. We'll be looking at things like thermal energy, oil shale, wind energy, solar energy. A lot of alternatives besides the petroleum-based oil and gas that we have today. USGS research will be broadened to contribute to the national discussion about future natural resource security, environmental effects of resource development, economic strength of the nation, and management of natural resources on public lands.
It's my understanding that domestic geothermal resources have the potential to provide significant amounts of clean, renewable, and reliable energy to the United States. Could you tell us about the USGS's assessment of these conventional moderate and high temperature geothermal resources? And if you can add, what are some of the major technical challenges for increased geothermal development?
Well, without question, the nation's energy demands will continue to grow. It's estimated that the United States will need to increase its electric power generating capacity 40 to 50% over the next 20 years. Geothermal energy is an alternative source available to partially satisfy this increase in demand. We're currently conducting an assessment of moderate and high temperature resources on public lands, and a report is due later this year. This will be the first comprehensive assessment in 30 years regarding geothermal resources. However, since 1979, the technology for power production increased dramatically. For example, the expansion of temperature range of geothermal systems capable of electric power generation makes low and moderate temperature systems more viable. And then there's enhanced geothermal systems and techniques. They create an opportunity to expand existing geothermal reservoirs and capabilities through hydrographic fracturing and other advanced techniques. We are working collaboratively in our efforts with the Department of Energy, Bureau of Land Management, and other federal agencies, along with the national labs, universities, state and local agencies, and even the geothermal industry.
Bob, recent events such as hurricanes, earthquakes, and natural fires have resulted in hundreds of deaths, disruption to commerce, and destruction of homes and critical infrastructure. Now, I understand that a core element of the USGS mission is to provide scientific information in order to minimize the loss of life and damage to property from these natural disasters. Could you tell us about your National Hazards Risk and Resilience Assessment Program and your efforts to develop a national risk monitoring program?
Well, the natural environment continues to pose risks to society. USGS has a long and respected history of providing relevant and timely information for responding to hazard events such as earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, landslides. We have an extensive network of sensors to model, forecast, and detect natural hazard events. We work in collaboration with partners around the world as part of the Global Seismic Network, with colleagues, universities as part of our Advanced System Seismic Network, and a new National Volcanic Early Warning System. Science and technology can play an important role in developing a disaster resilience program. The National Science and Technology Committee has a subcommittee working on disaster reduction, and they have identified 6 grand challenges for the future. To provide hazard and disaster information where and when it's needed. To understand natural processes that produce hazards. Develop strategies and technologies to reduce the impact of extreme events. To reduce the vulnerability of infrastructures. Develop standardized methods for communities to measure and assess disasters. And to promote risk-wise behavior. Now, we're currently working with the state of California, the state and local entities, to set up a planning exercise that will culminate in a November earthquake drill entitled The Great Shakeout. USGS Science and Information Products will significantly inform the exercise. One of the objectives of the exercise is to translate regional disasters to the local level, using a 7.8 earthquake event as the triggering mechanism. We expect to have about 5 million citizens participate in the process, and in fact, we have about 2 million people already signed up over the Internet. The exercise also includes a discussion with Canada and Mexico to explore cross-border implications and opportunities. And then we plan to have an international conference to be held in Los Angeles for other megacity participants to learn more from the exercise.
So, Bob, you mentioned networks and sensors. Could you tell me a little bit more about what some of the key monitoring networks are and what might you be doing to enhance these networks and expand their capabilities?
Well, the networks provide for us the ability to predict and characterize a hazard and provide information for response and recovery efforts. And USGS operates several critical hazard monitoring networks. Our key monitoring networks include the Global Seismic Network, the Advanced Network for Science Systems, Stream Gauges, Geomagnetic Observatory Laboratories, and satellites. The Global Seismic Network will be expanded to about 150 stations worldwide, enabling the USGS to report on recent earthquakes such as in China within minutes, and in Afghanistan. With the rebuilding that's occurred there, it's enabled us to restore an active site for the network to provide critical coverage in a disaster-prone area. We're also expanding our advanced network for seismic stations with additional sensors in additional locations. We're upgrading the software to greatly improve our earthquake notification, especially within at-risk urban areas. And we're speaking to partners to improve the quality of regional networks, for example, with California Tech, with the University of Nevada, and St. Louis University. And we're developing a national volcanic early warning system to adequately monitor all high-risk volcanoes in the United States to alert communities at risk, as well as aviation at risk, to the ash cloud formation. And we also have on the drawing boards the launch of Landsat 8, replace aging fleet of satellites, Landsat 5 and Landsat 7. I mentioned the Landsat 5 has been up and running for about 25 years.
Wow.
And Landsat 7 is on its 10th year, and both are well beyond their projected life.
Now, Bob, you talk about networks and partners, but just to clarify, and you mentioned some universities, partners can also include other governments around the world.
Yes. So a lot of the networks are really a collaborative effort. It's a good example of countries reaching together, working together to benefit the world as a whole. And so we have members in the Global Seismic Network from countries in Iran, in China, here in the United States, in Europe. All of us are certainly concerned about the hazards that are generated by earthquakes, and all interested in sharing information across countries so that we can all learn and understand the natural phenomenon of earthquakes and try to better advance understanding of that event.
I understand that over 75% of the declared federal disasters are related to flooding. And certainly we're in the middle of hurricane season, and that's top of mind to a lot of folks. And obviously we saw flooding hit the Midwest very hard this year. Could you tell us about USGS's flood response efforts in this past year, and what are some of the lessons learned during this past year?
Well, the USGS plays an important role in providing real-time information to flood responders. As you said, this past year, the Midwest was hit particularly hard by winds and torrential rains. We have a stream gauging network that provides invaluable real-time data to the National Weather Organization for forecasting potential flood areas. The network consists of over 7,000 gauges, and we have dedicated staff to install temporary gauges where coverage is needed during a hazard event. We also have historical river data that proves to be invaluable to understanding the implications of increased volume of water, turbidity, and the implications for communities and the ecological environment. Recent preparations for Gustav and Hanna, we've had extensive communications and coordination with our science centers in the affected areas, identifying where additional sensors in the network needed to be added so that while we have 7,000 sensors in permanent locations, depending on the hazard and where it occurs, we also have mobile units and we also have temporary sensors that we put in place to provide us some information. And I should mention that a lot of this information is telemetered and available real-time over the internet. And so, for example, if anybody wanted to see the readings on a particular gauge, all they needed to do was go to USGS, WWUSGS, and look at our WaterWatch website, and they'll be able to see the volume of water and its height that's occurring in a particular time and be able to see how that measurement compares to historical records. And so they get a sense of how high the water levels are and how fast the water is flowing. The National Weather Service is extremely reliant on that information because they're the ones that are responsible for making forecasts for flooding. But they greatly rely on some of the basic data that our scientists provide to them.
That's fantastic. How is the U.S. Geological Survey using innovative technology to succeed? We will ask Robert Doyle, Deputy Director of the USGS, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.